This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with John Robert Matz, and it's just so great to have a chance to catch up with you.
It's always wonderful to talk to you, Kate. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the last few conversations that we've had, you've had your cohorts from the Game Brass to talk about the albums that you've been releasing, but this time it's only you, and you've got a great soundtrack for the card game Mythgard. The music is amazing. The game is super fun. And so I'd love to know how the developers like reeled you in. What was their pitch to you?
So this is another project that I kind of got in connection with my friends over at A Shell of the Pit Audio up in Vancouver. And they reeled me in by pitching me on this by saying it was like basically, you know, a world of high technology, cyberpunk kind of future, but also the Greek gods and like Norse gods and mythological creatures are all there too, or are there in some capacity. And I'm like, okay, this is like urban fantasy seeds, like advanced, you know, 40, 50, 60 years, whatever. And I'm like, this sounds like it's going to be fun. I don't know. I like big epic things. And I like kind of like sci-fi future stuff. And so this is a weird, like, it was a fun opportunity. I got to kind of indulge in kind of a retro futuristic thing mashed into mythology, and that was an interesting playground to play around in. And then, you know, seeing some of the early art, like, it's super good and super compelling, and like, yeah, I don't know, it was just immediately, you know, made my brain spark in interesting ways, and I had some ideas and they liked those ideas and we went from there.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, the look of it, it's like a really great graphic novel, and the story is so interesting because Percy, the character that you play as, has been imprisoned in the underworld by her boyfriend, who's the king of the underworld, and she has to go through a duel to even get up to the surface, which is nothing like it was 1,000 years ago when she was still there. And so all of the demons and stuff that she meets are just so interesting. So yeah, I can see how it would give you a lot of ideas just right off the bat.
It's got a lot of little, like, it's pulling from a lot of different mythological threads. I mean, Percy is, spoilers, Persephone, you know, I mean, who in, you know, Greek mythology is married to Hades, and, you know, but she only goes down there, you know, every you know, half a year or whatever, and that's where you have the changing of the seasons, etc. And so there's, you know, you take that stuff and they put an interesting spin on it, and they made it a unique world, and, like, you know, basically some event has happened, all the gods have disappeared, but she's just been stuck down here and is like, okay, fed up with this, and heads up. And actually, like, you play as her for a good portion of the, so actually we should probably even explain the game. Like, it's a CCG, a collectible card game, like, you know, Magic the Gathering or Hearthstone, etc. And it has like a really full-fledged multiplayer mode, which is your classic one player versus another player, you know, competitive, you build your decks and you play your cards. But it also has this really neat single player campaign, which is like where we have, you know, kind of introduced the universe of the game. And in that game, in that campaign, you get to play as, you know, you get to play as Percy. You also get to play as a few other characters as you go along, where we kind of get to introduce other factions and other, you know, threads of the universe's story that eventually all kind of come together towards the end. And then you have to wait for season two to find out more stuff.
Well, what were some of the first ideas that you had for how to create a palette that was going to fuse the heroic mythological side of the music and the story, and then the synthy kind of cyberpunky type stuff? I mean, what were some of those early ideas like?
I admit freely that I'm a huge fan of the Tron score by Daft Punk and Joseph Trabanese. That score is super neat, but I'm also like a real, I'm really kind of a dumb fan of like very like early like 70s 80s synth sounds, like the kind of like nonsense that you get like from like Wendy Carlos and stuff like that. I know we're going back to more Tron stuff, I don't know why, but that's like the that's a neat sound, and I kind of like that. But I also like bringing this kind of more grand orchestral maybe a little bit over the top, frankly, but fun approach that you get in, like, I don't know, one of the most influential scores that I grew up on was the score for, you know, Lord of the Rings. And that is, like, has just some gloriously, like, apocalyptic moments in it. And I thought, well, if I take that and that kind of feel, and sure, there are a million other influences, but I like that feel and turn that up a few more notches to the point where it's literal gods and goddesses, and then take all of this electronic stuff and kind of mash them together and come up with something that feels right for both of them. Like, it's not even so much like a very clean blend. It's like it's like a strange, they complement and contrast, and I kind of like to lean into the contrasts of these sounds. And so, like, your synths are kind of like not just adding breath to the orchestra, but they are straight up another instrument. A weird pet peeve of mine, and I probably should never talk about pet peeves when I'm talking about stuff. So I hope I don't offend anyone. But, like, is, you know, in a period of time, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you get like early scores that had entirely synthetic orchestras, either with samples or synthesizers pretending to be orchestra sounds. And it always bothered me because I was a very opinionated, you know, teenager. What can I say? And I always felt like, you know, if you're going to do synthesizers, like, lean into the synthesizer sound, like make it a synth, make it like this is an instrument that can do things that nothing else can. So do those things. And I'm not a synthesizer expert in any way, shape or form. I have friends who are real deep into that. But this was a chance for me to kind of get to play around with that stuff and use that in conjunction with the stuff that I already do, which is, you know, more orchestral.
Yeah. What's so cool about it is it doesn't sound to me like the acoustic instruments that you used and then the, you know, the samples of acoustic instruments. They don't really fight with the synths. And it's just a nice, nice blend. And one of the things that I've been curious about is, how do you go about composing music or melodies or whatever that you know you're going to be using synths for? I mean, do you have an idea of what the sound is going to be as you're writing it?
It's not unlike, I mean, how I write for everything else. So for those of you watching the video, which is none of you, I am surrounded by a million instruments. There are like 6 French horns within arm's reach and like a ton of trumpets and a bunch of flutes and woodwinds and stuff like that. And there is definitely something to my approach in that if I'm writing something for an instrument, I want to make sure that it is, you know, playable. Like, I'm a brass player, and I'm pretty good at a lot of brass instruments. I'm not as good at some of the woodwinds, but I can play them reasonably well, and I can get a good sound out of them. And so I will tend to, like, if I want to write something that features instrument X, I will try to play it on instrument X. And definitely, as you're sitting there with a synthesizer, you're kind of figuring out what kind of sound do you want to get out of it? Because a synthesizer is like a weird blank slate to begin with. And then you start messing with knobs and patching things into other things until you get something that is, you know, mess with filters until you have the sound you want and get it to speak the way you want it to. And sometimes, as you're arriving at that, the ideas occur to you. Now, sometimes you're using that to supplement other stuff, like, oh, I've written a horn line, but I want to take a synthesizer and double that horn line to give it an electronic edge. Like, that's cool, and that works well. But sometimes if you're doing something, you're, like, from the ground up, you're writing for a voice that is an electronic voice, you know, figuring out what that voice sounds like and how it behaves can kind of feedback and inform the actual melody that you're writing. And I don't know, that has always been kind of my approach with everything. If I'm going to write something on, you know, Penny Whistle or something like that, like, I'm going to just pick it up and figure out what it sounds like, and the kind of, you know, the approach and the flourishes and the idiomatic characteristic elements of the instrument become, you know, part of the sound of the melody that you're writing. You know, otherwise it feels like disconnected from it in some way. I don't know, that's a lot of weird nonsense to kind of just say that, like, it felt right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you come up with, you know, everything kind of feeds in and on itself, and the idea becomes clear after a bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know, asking me to think about how I do stuff is always a bit weird, but it works
sorry,
out okay.
Sorry
I think.
To put you on the spot.
No, it's fine.
Well, would you like to pull apart the main theme? Because I really love it. It is stuck in my head. It's been stuck ever since I heard the album. And what I love about it is how it's got all these different characters. It can go from really intimate to massively epic and heroic. And so how much experimentation did you do to finally settle on, yeah, this is it. This is the main theme.
It's real funny that you say that, because that was the first thing I wrote for the game. Whenever I sit down to write music for a new project, the very first thing I do, if I can, is I will try to come up with something that is emblematic or characteristic of the entire thing, of the entire project. And that will hit like a bunch of different points along the way, etc. Like, obviously, you know, I think I was actually listening to a talk that you did with Gareth not that long ago about his... about his score for Phoenix,
right.
and he talks about writing a suite of music at the very
and
beginning.
It's like having this big pantry then that he can pull from.
Exactly,
yeah.
It's not unlike that in my case. It was interesting to hear that he does this in a codified way. I always just start with like, well, let's see what the main thematic, you know, the main thematic idea for this is going to be, and the colors that are going to be attached to that are going to be the colors that are attached to the entire project, and so. I was like, okay, well, the first thing that theme starts off with is kind of this sort of high, mysterious, ethereal kind of floating, you know, mix of strings and synths. And there's what I kind of think of as like this prophecy motif or something like that. I don't know what else to describe it, but it's like a mystic echo of something. And as you get this little piano motif at the very beginning. And that kind of works its way down and then gets echoed from the piano into a more keyboard-like synthesizer. Then we land and we get the kind of the answer. Mm-hmm. So that's like the call, you know, this prophetic call, if you will, or like this legend maybe that is barely remembered across history. I don't know. this echo of mankind's own mythology. And then it is answered in the deep. And that's you bring in like your kind of brass. And it's a more heroic theme that is what answers the ba-ba-bum, ba-ba-ba-bum. It's a simple rising motion that kind of builds and then grows every time. So it's like a rallying cry sort of thing that builds up, or a rallying call that builds up until we get the downward cascade and we get to open up full and bring you the big kind of sweeping heroic line. I wish I could be like, here's exactly how I wrote this. but like, I wanted to describe an arc with it. And one of the very first images that I got, which weirdly in retrospect is like, to me has been kind of supplanted in the game as like an image, but it was this image of this giant mountain that like it would animate and kind of come to life to reveal itself to be like some ancient titan. And then would kind of just, you know, it was just a little animated image, and it was, I think, like in the beta of the game as like the backdrop. And so, like, for some reason, I feel like this mountain slope angle, like, sort of informed the shape of that main theme, like where we start small and we grow and we taper off at the end. And arguably, that's a very common sort of shape for a main theme to take. But I liked it because we got to start small, we got to have this stuff build up to something grand. And then relax back to where we were at the end. Like we've resolved it, but it's, you know, the magic is still there. I wish I could be like, oh, here is exactly how I figured out how to do this. But in reality, I think it was pretty much figured out like the way most of my stuff is, which is I was either, you know, washing dishes or something where I'm doing nothing important and I'm thinking about what it's going to be and I get an idea. Or I was looking at concept art and I will sing it into my cell phone and that's the thing. And I definitely have, like, at the time I was, you know, since COVID happened, we were all stuck at home. But at the time I was still, you know, teaching as an adjunct faculty person at an area high school. And I was definitely, like, I definitely have on my phone from, like, 2018 or something like that, a voice recording of me playing through the theme on the piano in my studio at the school just between periods while I was waiting for a student to show up. And it's like, yeah, this is it. And, like, figuring out what the chord progression is and sketching out the shape of it. And, like, I tend to kind of approach things with a kind of whole cloth approach where it's like, I know what the orchestration's going to basically be from the beginning. I know what the colors are going to be from the very beginning. And, like, I'm, you know, on the recording just describing these, like, and the horns do this. And then, like, maybe we have this, you know, then we bring in, arpeggiated strings to kind of give it this, you know, kind of Zimmer-esque vibe for the direction under this, that kind of thing. And so on some level, like, it's all there from the very beginning when I'm coming up with ideas. And, and then it's just an effort to try to take whatever the core of the idea is that I had and realize it, you know, on the computer. And that may be then sitting down and recording a dozen, you know, brass parts and layering them in with sampled strings and, you know, synthesizers and, you know, building it that way. You know, it may be turning it into notation and sending it out for people to record or having a session somewhere and doing it that way. But, like, it's all an effort to kind of arrive back at whatever the original idea is in my head, and usually along the way discovering a bunch of new sounds that flesh out that idea even more.
Yeah. So, well, what's so cool about it is it works in the score because you can use even just like a tiny fragment of it and it's super recognizable, but then there it is embedded in one of the other cues and stuff. So it really makes the score sound really cohesive.
I'm so glad that that works that way. I wish, you know, this is again, one of these things that, like, I feel like it is integral to the way that I write and I don't really think about it until I've done the thing and I realize, oh yes, the first phrase of this can be just put in here and it works perfectly well, or this one little motif or this one gesture is immediately identifiable. You don't need to hear the whole thing to connect with something, you know. So having these, like, it's almost like the theme is there, but then you can break off little motifs from that and sprinkle them throughout and have the same effect or have the same connection. And on some level my brain is doing that, but I'm definitely not, like, consciously like, yes, this part will be perfect to apply to everything.
Thank you.
you mentioned that you hit on that theme in 2018. So how long did you have to put this score together?
Oh, I think that's a good question. I think, I probably have to go look at actual file names, but I feel like I wrapped everything up. Like, I wrote all the music for the game itself, for, like, the actual gameplay sequences, like, 2018, 2019, like, over the holidays or something like that. Like, from, you know, late summer to, you know, early 2019. And then I very distinctly remember, and I hope I'm not wrong about this, and not, like, off by a year or something, because time seems to travel in strange ways right now. But I distinctly remember getting back from GDC and just sitting down and writing, you know, having suddenly every cutscene for the single player campaign, which is like, you know, 35, 40 minutes of cutscenes, come in, and scoring all of those just bam, 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 all the way down to the, you know, in just like the month or so after GDC was done that year. And that was fun.
Well, especially because, you know, there's so many great ideas that get tossed around at GDC, and so many, you know, learning opportunities and chances to talk to, you know, your colleague composers and stuff. And so I can imagine when you got back, you had all this enthusiasm for just diving in and working on it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it is one of the things that has been, like, it, you know, going to GDC or going to Game Sound Con, you know, for us, you know, music, game audio folks, it is always, you know, a fun time and an educational time, but weirdly, like, even if I don't feel like, oh, I've learned new things, I've been inspired by my peers and my friends a lot. And then you come home and take all of the things that you maybe have just learned, or even the things that you already knew, and just, like, roll with it, like, build on the stuff you know. And you have a lot of passion and a lot of energy that just comes from being around your peers and your friends and seeing what they have done. And I don't know, you're like, yes, I can do this. You know, too. I don't know. It's sort of how it works.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cutscenes, I mean, there are so many interesting characters that we meet in the cutscenes, like Ingrid the Valkyrie and Ixion the Betrayer. And so I'm wondering if there were aspects of their characters or the voice acting in that bring these characters to life is so good. So how did you use that for, like, inspiration?
Whenever you're doing stuff with characters, it is a case of, like, you look at, you know, what is this person about? Are they part of a faction? In this case, like, there are very distinct factions. You have the Valkyries, you have the Magpyre Corporation, you have, you know, all these different, like, different organizations, and those groups and the, you know, color what the character is going to be like. But the character is also a distinct thing. So if I'm writing something that involves this character, I'll try to, like, figure out, okay, what can I give them that is unique? There is an angel, let's say, that shows up in the game in the single player campaign, and it's like, and he's part of the Parson Empire, and the Empire of Parsa, I should say, and they have a different sort of sound, and I'm like, okay, well, what can I do that kind of feels right for this character? And so it is, you know, maybe a little bit cliche, and I know better objectively, but I had it on hand, and so I gave. Like, one of the instruments that I chose for him, or for the faction that he represents, is like a duduk, an Armenian, which is an Armenian instrument, which isn't, you know, anyway. But anyway, but it is a, you know, a double reed that has a very distinct sound that we in Western cinematic language we associate kind of vaguely with the Middle East. And I know that is a cliche, but there we are. But I'm like, well, it wouldn't do to have just that. Like, there's also like he serves the queen, and the queen is some kind of a cyborg or a robot or an AI construct that has divine qualities and stuff. Like, okay, well, we're gonna take that and run it through, like, guitar simulation and like weird extra effects and stuff to make it something else. And I think in the end, like, it was like the instrument, track name that had all of these plugins stapled to it and modified on top of it was, like, called Parson Digital Duduk. And I'm like, cool, that's what we're gonna call it. That's the nonsense that we use. And so, like, so his theme gets played on that, but then he also has, like, this air of regalness, and we have, like, this very warm, like, French horn choir sound, basically, which feels like right for him, for the kind of nobility of purpose that he brings to this stuff. So it's like taking this character and like, what are they about? What is their attitude? How is that gonna be represented by instruments? Like, Ingrid is a Valkyrie. She's a real, like, a tough cookie. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a
biker chick.
Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, like very early on, she's just holding a vampire by the throat and throws them off a balcony. You know, negotiations have opened. And with, you know, between Ingrid and the vampires. Yeah, she's just throwing this person off a balcony while lightning flashes in the sky. You know, no big deal.
Right.
So, of course, she gets just, like, big gestures and stuff. And, like, I, you know, and so I'm like, okay, what do we do with her? How can we do stuff? And so she has some real kind of like badass motifs, and like I wanted to give her, I thought that actually going with like electric guitars and stuff would be maybe a little too cliche, so we don't get that up front, but like actually like there's like some synthesizer stuff that is run through guitar, some, you know, kind of like some more metal focused, you know, guitar models and stuff like that, to kind of like once again blend those two worlds, some acoustic instruments that are run through stuff that shouldn't maybe be, but to give her sort of that style, that kind of like epicness that you get from like a distant guitar solo in the background. Percy's motif is actually kind of a more introspective one, because she's spent all this time by herself trying to figure things out, and eventually sets on this in this path, and so she has this kind of almost melancholy piano motif that kind of, you know, it has a sense of motion to it, and it's very, you know, it's a kind of a chordally driven thing, but that's all kind of again taken from this idea, this character, like, she's way more badass than that, but this is her internal character. What's she going through? What has she been thinking about? It's a more introspective mode for her. I'm kind of rambling about all this stuff.
It's so interesting, though. It's like, you know, lifting the top of your head off and looking at your brain and finding out about this. So.
Most of the time, it's just you look at the character and you say, what are they about?
Mm-hmm.
What is their vibe? What do I feel like they are going to be like? Are they a good guy? Are they a bad guy? Are they kind of ambiguous? And then, like, how are they dressed? What is their faction? What is that? And that will change the colors that you use to depict things, you know, but like their character and their character arc is what, you know, what is the melodic approach, you know? And sometimes those things, of course, everything is, you know, a hodgepodge and a homogeny of different ideas, and you put them all in there together and you temper it in a direction, and that's what you get.
Well,
you know?
What's really what I appreciate about the soundtrack that you put together is that it has such a huge spectrum of mood and feeling and texture. And there's one track in particular. It comes after like a lot of really bombastic ones, but it's Nightfall in Mythgard, and it just sounds so quiet and empty. And there's just something about it reminds me of Aaron Copland's Quiet City in a way, because there's a stillness to it. That just really, it's like you're wandering around in this city at night and no one else is around.
Yeah, that was basically like the vibe that I wanted to go. There's some art very early in the game where we like pan across like this mega city. And I just had this image of like, okay, what are we going to do? We needed to have Nightfall in Mythgard is actually primarily used, if I'm not mistaken, is like one of the things you get in main menu stuff when you're like going through your card library or whatever and trying to figure things out. After we have the bombastic main theme that'll play when you boot into the game, if you chill for a while, we'll get you this theme. And Nightfall in Mythgard is just like a relaxed sort of, you know, something to kind of like, it's nice to listen to, mm-hmm. but it's not going to like slap you in the face and make you get out of your seat with excitement. The image that I have, though, is like what if you were up on one of these towers looking out over the city, and like there's, you know, neon lit stuff and, you know, flying cars or like the vibe of like almost a noir sort of cyberpunk city from a distance.
Like Blade Runner, kind of, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. Very Blade Runner in many ways. And taking that kind of approach to the mood of it, you know, this is a thing that was not written for a specific cutscene, but it was like, okay, it is a mood piece, and the mood we want to have is something like this. And so that's where that came from.
It's really and cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's a nice foil and a nice change of pace with
exactly.
the other really epic, music for bosses and battles and that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, you need to have a little bit of downtime.
Yeah.
A little bit of introspection.
Yeah. I think it was Chris Velasco who was saying he actually really likes writing exploration music for games because it gives him a chance to just kind of chill and recharge. And it's because writing music for bosses and enemies and stuff really takes a lot out of you mentally. So
yeah, combat music is like, as far as complexity and difficulty, it is a time consuming ordeal, and it is emotionally exhausting sometimes. And weirdly enough, like, especially if you're talking exploration music, there is something to the act of exploration that is inherently exciting and invigorating, and somehow that feeds back on you as a composer. I don't know if everyone is this way when they write, and I know everyone is very different, but the emotional state that I am in is directly related to the music that I'm writing. And if I'm writing something that is discovery oriented, if I'm gonna like to reveal something new or interesting, like that is frequently like that will come back and affect my mood, and I will feel more engaged, more interested about the world somehow. If I'm writing combat music, you feel more You feel more aggressive. You feel more excited, invigorated by the action of this thing. If you're writing a big dramatic gesture, like, I don't know, maybe it's just like I'm rejoicing in the nonsense that I'm creating, and that is fun. But like it is like, you know, something about writing like relaxing music, you know, like something that's chill, that is less intense, that is a moment to breathe in the game, is also somehow like a moment. I couldn't write it if I was like actively stressed, or I would find it harder to do. Like everything, it feeds back on itself. So you're writing it, and by the time you're done writing it,
well,
it's really nice.
With this project, did you have enough freedom of the timeline and when you had to hit those deadlines that you could choose to work on one particular kind of music or another? Or was it more directed exactly by the studio, we need this right now, kind of?
I'm sure I could have like done things in different, in whatever order I wanted to, but it was more a case of the gameplay stuff I took care of well in advance, and we like filled in more things as we needed more things. But like the very first thing I wrote was like the basic combat music, and designed this interactive system for switching, you know, who is playing. You know, so if the hero side is playing or the enemy side is playing, we switch gears, and designing that system, coming up with the main theme, and a few other tracks that we just had just for non-story stuff. That happened first for the most part. I think there were a couple of things. I think like Nightfall and Mythgard was actually something I wrote after all of the story stuff was done. But then the story stuff came in sequence, in order. And so I got to write it in order. Which meant that I got to kind of take the emotional journey and the character journey with the characters, you know, which it was kind of like getting to, you know, if you've talked to legitimate authors who write works of literature, you know, you have people who are discovery writers, or they are like outline writers, and sometimes there's crossover between the two. But I find myself like in this case, like, the outline was figuring out, okay, we're going to have a story with cutscenes. We're going to figure out how we're going to technically achieve the cutscenes. And then we're going to have gameplay, and this is the gameplay. And, okay, these are the things. And then give me the story. And you look at it, and you kind of discovery write. You look at, like, what is the tone of this scene? What lines do we have? You know, we have VO, the character says this. How do they say this? What are the connotations of this thing? Sometimes we're introducing things that are unique to this world, like a concept or a technology or a mystical object. And you're like, what does that mean? What is that? Should that be something we're afraid of or something we're in awe of? Which is kind of the same thing, but, you know, or like, is it something that is beautiful or something that is horrifying? Even if the characters in the scene, maybe this is a bad guy and they're very happy about this bad thing, you know, I mean, this is stuff that you don't like really have to think about that much, but you get to sit, you know, because it's instinctual mm-hmm. to the human experience, or at least the human experience of being trained through years and years of watching, you know, film and drama and plays and whatnot. You know what, how to follow, you know, the emotional beats of something, but getting to sit down and basically discovery write the score for all these cutscenes and follow the arc of the characters in the way that it was going to be experienced in the end by players, it meant that weaving threads back in, you know, weaving thematic threads for different characters or factions, like getting to lay this stuff out very loosely in advance and then stitch them in as we worked through the through the story was very nice. It was like very similar to scoring for a film, you know, and scoring to picture is a kind of stimulus response thing for me, at least. You look at the picture, you know what to do, or you try to figure out what to do. And in this case, because it is a kind of a comic book cutscene with voice acting, without a ton of sound design, without a ton of motion, the music gets to be the motion, and the music gets to be some of the sound design. And so you get to, there's really, you know, a much more freedom to that than maybe if you're doing something where it's exacting. And you have to be out of the way for this little sound design moment. Instead, I can punch the sound design moment with the music in some way, and that extra enhances that. But yeah, I feel like I'm getting a little bit far afield from the original question here.
I don't remember what the original question was, but
yeah, I'm sorry. It was a lot of fun, to kind of discovery right my way through the story. And like, I think what you originally asked was, can you jump around and do stuff anywhere you wanted depending on how you felt? And the answer is, maybe I could have, but I didn't really want to. Sometimes I'd have a neat idea for a thing, and that would go on my list of outlines, like, Magpie Corporation, they're gonna, I have a really cool idea for a motif for them or a theme for them, and so I'll scribble that out somewhere, and I'll stitch it into this tapestry that I'm creating when I get to it. Now, that sounds really...
No, it's
stupidly poetic.
Well,
you're stitching the tapestry of a video game soundtrack for a universe
out of
these threads from... Anyway, sorry, I'll stop.
No, it's neat. And that's a luxury that a lot of composers for games don't have, because they get chunks of the game kind of out of order. And so even though they know what the overall story mission is going to be, they have to, I guess, just sort of cut and paste the music for whatever particular chunk of the game that they've gotten. So
yeah, you have a lot of open world games and stuff like that too, where things can happen in tons of different, the possibility space is broad, and you can jump into, from the starting plateau, you could go anywhere, and you have to be able to make that feel like a thing and feel intentional, even though technically they could have gone here after zones, C, F, and Y. They've gone to zone A, finally. And, and so what are you going to do with that? How do you treat that? In this case, it was a little bit easier because it is a linear progression, at least on the story front.
Sure, yeah.
So you could get away with that sort of approach versus planning it all out and having to kind of, when you can do anything, you have to remember that you can do anything. And therefore, it's harder to kind of build on top of things, except for like story progress, So anyway, we're not talking about open world games right now, though.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you sent out parts for some of your musician pals to record. So is there anybody that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Well, actually, so this is going to sound really self-congratulatory. Almost everything on this score is just stuff that I played myself.
Wow.
It is... there's a ton of live instruments, but it's all things that I've done myself and laid out myself, except for some fantastic electric guitar playing by my friend Robbie Duguay, who is also in the game brass. And there we go, bringing it full circle. He contributed to some of the score here and there, and that was super great to have him on board. And he also helped to master the soundtrack in the final hours of let's get this out, share this with people finally outside of the game. Here's the score.
Yeah. I know it's been a really busy time for you, and you've got a lot of things going simultaneously, and I bet there are some composers listening who would love to know how you organize your workflow and how you keep things separate and don't go crazy.
So for those of you not watching the video version, I started like trying not to laugh when she said organize. You see, you've made the terrible mistake of assuming that I'm organized. Aha, that's the fatal error. No, no, I am organized by anxiety. I've got, you know, it is a tricky thing to kind of spin so many plates. And no matter how many plates I think I have spinning properly, invariably someone hands me some more plates and I go, I should say no to this, but I did say yes, I could do this 2 years ago, and I feel bad about letting you down now, so let's see if I can fit some more plates on here. But no, it is, it's tricky. Like, organizing a schedule to kind of keep track of multiple teams and multiple projects is a very tricky thing. Some people do spreadsheets. I have like 4 million reminders. I have like lists of basically things I have to do in every project that I gradually go from highlighting and like no highlight at all, like to red, meaning I got to address this still, orange, stuff is happening, yellow, it's mostly there, green, it's done and shipped, I don't have to worry about it anymore. It's very nice at the end to look at a list that just is all green.
Yeah.
And be like, yes, that's done. You know, like, and invariably, and when you're working on games, there are, especially indie games, there are lots of, maybe that's unfair, but like, you know, especially on indie games, especially when with the strangeness of the last year that we've had, there are invariably fun delays that mean that things happen at different times. And so you end up like, you know, we're situations where, I've done all this stuff, but now we're going to wait because, you know, there's nothing to do because it's not ready to be tested. I can't test the implementation that I designed until we reach this point in the game. Like, oh, we have the game, but you can't save it, and it's also 20 hours long. So, you know, you can't test it really very well. Wait until we have the save game system in, you know, that kind of thing. You know, stuff like that. Or, you know, and so it helps to have, like, you know, keep lists and keep things, you know, tracked in some way. And I'm sure that some people have much better systems than I do. But yeah, like, my goal is always to, like, try to make sure that I am keeping all the projects that I'm juggling taken care of. I don't want anybody to be waiting on things for me, obviously, you know, and it is a balancing act and it's tricky, but it's super fun. Like, at its best, you have a wonderful chance to, and here you go, this is the real trick. But earlier you mentioned, you know, writing music, you know, do you get to choose music to that fits whatever it is? And the answer is, you know, for this game, I did it all in chronological order. But hey, if I wanted to feel something different, or if I wanted to delve into something different, or I had an idea for something different, I could have just, and I did in many cases, I was writing this at the same time I was writing the score for Ambition, A Minuet in Power, which is all period classical era music. And it's a very different sound than this. And so sometimes I really want to delve into that sort of sound, and I would switch gears and work on that. And being able to be like, yes, on Tuesday I work on this, on Wednesday I work on this, you know, and Thursday I work on this, you have a kind of a spectrum of projects that you can work on and have, you know, keep your musical palette a bit fresh. You know, sometimes you fall into a project that is, you know, big enough that you know it absorbs all your attention for a while, but you know, being able to kind of switch gears is nice. Maybe it's just me, like, learning to work with my ADHD, you know, as opposed to against it. But that's where we're at.
Well, it must help with writer's block, too, because if you've written yourself into a corner in one score, you can always hop on over and start fresh with different ideas, or, you know, a different approach and work on that one instead. So is there anything you can tell us about the music that you're writing for the expansions of Mythgard, or is that still a secret?
That is something I cannot speak about
okay.
at this time, and I'm very sorry.
No,
okay. Yeah, we'll see how everything goes. You know, that is right now. That is yeah. I can't say anything.
Okay.
So. Sorry.
No, that's okay. You know, the first conversation we had for Music Respawn was right after you'd gotten the Rookie of the Year award from the Game Audio Network Guild, and that was so much fun. And that was way back in 2017, and I'm just wondering, you know, how you've grown as a composer since then.
How have I grown as a composer since then? I've gotten a lot more comfortable working with other musicians, bringing other musicians into projects and doing things of that sort. Like I was in Fossil Echo, I had only worked with one good friend, Michaela Noctegal, who's a violinist. She was the only person who played on that score outside of my, you know, my own playing. And I was very nervous to be like sending stuff out to her and be like, here, I wrote this music. Can another human being who is musically competent play the music that I wrote? You know, I've done it for live performances of things where I'm writing the score from the beginning, but I'm like, oh man, what if I don't give her exactly what she needs? And granted, you know, Mythgard, I just said that almost everything in Mythgard I played myself. But for other things, like, you know, for other projects I've done, it has been all live or very, very close to all live. And knowing and being more confident with working with live musicians and mixing vast ensembles, especially in, you know, in the past year or so as we've been locked down, the kind of approach that I have taken with remote recording full orchestras and assembling them piecemeal of like individual violin recordings and individual, you know, viola and cello recordings, and then making that sound like a congruent whole. Like I've gotten much better at doing that sort of stuff and mixing that into something that sounds right. You know, like technical stuff has just gotten generally better. I've streamlined, you know, my my process a bit. Like you learn how to do stuff and you get better, you know, and you hope that whatever creative well that you had learned to tap into when you started does not run dry. And sometimes you feel like, oh, I have no good ideas, and then something comes up and you get four ideas and that's great. And so it's always a relief to hear that people still like the stuff you're writing, and that's nice. I don't know, you know, you're always learning and always growing and always picking up new stuff and always being inspired by your, you know, by your peers and the work that they're doing. And I'm very fortunate to, you know, to be able to lean on those things and do those things. Yeah, I feel like so much of what I do, like, you know, I have so little time to actually play video games nowadays, so that when I get to, it's a really lovely and joyful experience. But I'm also, some part of my brain is always, if I'm playing Hades, I'm going, man, Darren did a great job with this score. Oh man, the implementation's really slick, the, you know, et cetera. And like, I'm like constantly somewhere in my brain, it's taking down ideas and remembering how, you know, or thinking about how these things could be used. Or how I could take an idea from how the strategic structure of this was designed, you know, and then use that in my own stuff, or just even just inform my own work, you know, with that. So it's always a growing process. Like, I think as much as we as composers would love to kind of lock ourselves away and be like, I want to go off in the woods and live in a beautiful, like, have a beautiful view with a grand piano and just, I, you know, nothing from the world, I just write this music. I need the constant barrage of inspiration and ideas from other people, you know, even if I, you know, even if it's in tiny doses, in context, in the game, or in a film or whatever, like getting that to kind of inform and keep me connected is helpful, and then you just learn from that and grow. I don't know, you know, that's
very good, you passed.
thank you
That was kind of a big question.
Is that the right answer? I just told you how have you improved?
Yeah,
since then?
Yeah, no,
well, I got better. Uh-huh. There you go. I don't know.
That was a big question to just throw at you.
I guess the real answer is I feel like maybe it wasn't a fluke. I can maybe do this professionally. Yeah. Maybe I'm okay. And the imposter syndrome is a thing, friends. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Well, it's been so much fun to catch up with you, and I cannot wait to hear what you do with the Mythgard expansions and your other projects. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.